periodically, my karma is to have to give a Dharma talk when I have a migraine headache. So I'm not at my best this evening. I apologize in advance. So if I fall into a prolonged silence, don't be offended. Speaking of afflictions, I was waiting for the bus to the train around noon at the what was called the temporary Transbay Terminal in San Francisco, which used to be a very busy place because the Greyhound buses arrived and departed from there. But now it's like practically deserted. Actually, it is deserted, and there's one little corner for Amtrak. So people would sometimes show up looking for Greyhound and have to be directed elsewhere. And while we were waiting, there's just a few of us, and into the room there comes a woman, very short and very round, who was sobbing, just sobbing and kind of carrying on. It was very hard at first to figure out what was the problem, but it turned out she was looking for Greyhound, and Greyhound wasn't there anymore, and this was this was completely overwhelming to her, poor soul. I thought maybe Down syndrome, it was a little hard to tell. And then she would try to call someone, and that got voicemail, and then she got more overwhelmed. So we're all kind of like, what to do? And I couldn't think of anything too constructive except just sort of stand by her and kind of, try to get her to understand that the Greyhound was just like two blocks right up there. I was like, no, I'm not. And there was a young woman there who was very calm and collected, and she turned and said, try taking a deep breath, right? And that didn't really work, but they did sort of engage, and then finally this young woman said, would you like me to walk you over there? And the other lady went, yes. And so off they went, and I thought, that was very good. And I said, I said that, that Amtrak bus is coming. And she said, well, it's okay, my train's at 2 o'clock, so I think I can make it. And I had that thought that I could walk her over there, and I thought, then I'd miss my bus, and then people would be mad at me in Sacramento. And so while I'm dithering, this other lady comes and sort of takes charge of the situation in this very calm way. And I thought, that's very good. Here I am with my Buddhist beads. And here's this lady who's just waiting for a bus, and she takes the situation in hand, and strolls off. Oh, well, actually, they sort of staggered off together. But I think, that did it. That was what was needed for the situation. And I thought what was very helpful was that both of us, the helper woman and myself, we were pretty calm, and that created a certain space for the lady who was so upset to be upset in, without people getting upset that she was upset. Because there were some other folks who were giving her some very sidelong looks, and that was making her feel worse. So the fact that there were just a couple of people who were able to just kind of hang out there and not be real excited was tremendously helpful. And I assume that sort of thing's obvious. But there are these illustrations of daily practice in its simplest and most straightforward form that if you look around, you find easily, any day you could see this sort of thing happen, and you can be part of it. Usually if some elaborate intervention is necessary, that may have to you know, somebody else may have to take care of that. But if just something simple like that is necessary, any of us can be available in that way. And it's good if we can, if we can be acquainted with our own peace. This is very, very helpful, and have real confidence in that, you know, and experience it as, to an important degree, unshakable. Right? This very, very strong sense of rootedness, even if things are flying around in our immediate vicinity. So our practice, our sitting practice, is a great way to get acquainted with that peace. And there's something a little tricky here, okay? Because I've just described something that you might feel inspired to hunt for, right? Or to kind of, I don't know, deliberately foster or something. And, you know, that's okay, but the peace I'm talking about is not other than you. Right? So it's not a skill that you acquire. it's a feature of your being, our being, that is present already, all the time. And therefore, it's a richness, a resource that others can also benefit from. And sometimes it's enough just to know that it is, so to speak, there, even though there isn't anywhere. Certainly nowhere other than you are, and nowhere that you have to go hunt for. Okay. So this sort of peace is very, very important and is a hallmark of Dharma study and Dharma practice that is, I don't know, maybe I could get away with saying it's all but guaranteed, right? Because you don't have to go get it. So I imagine some of you or all of you, you know, you're sitting there thinking, yeah, we know all this. You know, tell us something we're not familiar with. And if that's the case, well, then we can all just go home. No? All right. Never mind. Yeah, nice try. Yeah. And so, it's perfectly okay to have some question like, well, what does this peace look like? What does it taste like? What does it sound like? This is okay as long as you don't think there is a some definitive answer to that you don't already know. So this peace is what's happening now. And so you don't sit zazen to make that peace happen. You sit zazen in celebration of it and in appreciation of it. And it's the fact that it is in some way, in some sense, colorless and tasteless is its great strength. Because then you won't be looking for certain characteristics to appear so that you feel like you are in possession of peace. Because that's a waste of time. So I was looking at one of our wonderful collections of Zen stories. And if you're a Zenist and you have to give a talk, it's nice that you've got these huge collections of stories, so there's always something to talk about in case you don't feel like inventing something from whole cloth. So one of our collections is called the Empty Valley Collection. And today with the event, with the young woman who was so upset, I was reflecting on this particular story. This involves one of our towering ancestors, Yaoshan. Way back in the mists of the Tang Dynasty somewhere. Yaoshan had a community of practitioners, and a young monastic came to visit. A young fellow by the name of Gao, who was a novice. And so he maybe hadn't been practicing very long. But as usual, when you come to a community like that, you go and see the teacher. And so he went to see Yaoshan, and Yaoshan said, where are you coming from? And Gao said, from Nanyue. And Nanyue is both a place name and the name of another towering teacher. So he may have been referring to the place and also the teacher by that name. And Yaoshan said, and where are you going? And Gao said, I'm going to Jiangling to receive the precepts. And Yaoshan says, why are you doing that? And Gao says, I mean to escape birth and death. And Yaoshan nods and says, okay, but you know, there's someone who has no precepts and has no birth and death to escape. Do you know him? And Gao says, well then, what are Buddha's precepts for? And Yaoshan says, this fellow is still caught up in gain and loss. And Gao takes his leave, perhaps a little hangdog. But it turns out that two other great Zen worthies were in Yaoshan's community. One was Yunyan, who is the teacher of our founder, Dongshan, and his good buddy, Dao Wu. So he says to them, you know, that novice had something on the ball there. And Dao Wu says, well, maybe, but I think you ought to probe further. And Yaoshan says, okay. So that night, Yaoshan is to give a talk. And he gets on to the teaching seat and he says, where is that novice who showed up earlier? And Gao steps forward. And Yaoshan says, I hear the capital is very noisy. Do you know about that? And Gao says, my province is peaceful. And what does Yaoshan say? Anyway, the dialogue continues a little further, and at that response, Yaoshan is very pleased. Gao steps back into the assembly, and Yaoshan says to Yunyan and Dao Wu, see, I told you so. So the Gao's utterance, my province is peaceful, reveals that he was acquainted with this peace I'm talking about. And the
Maybe the import of the story is that this peace is ours. All of ours. And for the teacher to ask, do you know about this? Is an invitation to, I know what it was. This other little piece of the dialogue. This is cool. Yaoshan says, did you get that from reading sutras or asking about the teaching? And he's on a roll at this point. He says, I didn't get it from reading sutras or asking about the teaching. And Yaoshan says, well, wait, lots of people don't read sutras or ask about the teaching. Don't they get it? Why don't they get it? And Gao says, I don't say they don't get it. Just that they don't take it on. So there's an interesting little hook there. Presumably, novice Gao and Yaoshan and the rest of the gang, they wouldn't say that any of us don't get it. But they might ask if we have taken it on. Another translation is take responsibility for. So this means not only is your province peaceful, but all other beings are invited in to share that peace. This is one sense of to take responsibility for that peace, to take it on, to travel the world knowing in some very deep and not histrionic way that that peace is your own, right? And your own to share. And sharing it, you know, all that necessarily means is someone's very upset. You can just be with them. Let them be upset. And know deeply that your own peace is not threatened by that. And under good circumstances, that will echo with their own peace. Without anybody knowing what's going on, right? It just happens. You've probably seen that. People, you know, very excited, agitated, and someone is very calm with them, and it kind of spreads. Sometimes the opposite happens, which is very sad. That's usually, you know, when people aren't so, they haven't really taken it on, right? They haven't really taken responsibility for that peace. So just like the poem that we were chanting, it says, I don't know, I'm not supposed to make disparaging remarks about the version of the poem we're using. So there's I don't know if this is exactly how it is in your version, but it says something like, it's not reached by feelings or consciousness. Same with this peace. You don't get to reach out and grab it. Why? Because it's not apart from you. To reach out is to reach away. So if you're sitting there and yielding to the temptation to look for the peace, seeking peace, that's okay, but But recognize that your seeking is in the peaceful realm itself. In other words, there's no escape from this peace. So you might as well take it on. This is all stuff I was thinking about on the train before my headache got really bad. And I had time to come up with a poem. And as I think I've said, I'm trying to come up with my own poems for these stories, which is kind of an old tradition. And I very much doubt that posterity will remember my poems. But anyway, it's a good exercise. So let's see if my headache will allow me to remember my poem. Let's see here. Sea to shining sea. A butterfly's wings, the only sound. Brush some leaves away and gaze upon the brilliant moon of autumn sailing on the still forest pool, remembering that leaves and moon are one. Seigetsu says, surprise, your province is peaceful too. So don't hide your light, and also don't try to shine it at other people either. Just let it be, as the old song says. Or as Emily Dickinson says, what did she say? Something like, tell the whole truth. No, tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Because if you tell it straight out, it could blind everyone. So a lot of these stories, it's all there, and they're telling it slant for our sake. When Suzy Kiroshi said, sometimes I feel like I could go on sitting forever, he's speaking from our peaceful province. As you can. Since most of you aren't giving me really funny looks, I assume I'm making sense. But, as I say, a little fuzzy this evening, so. Perhaps you'd like to have some discussion now. Or ask some question. Or just hang out in peace. Oh, yes?
Yes. At the beginning of your talk, it brought to mind a sutra I read just this morning about the divine messengers. And I wondered if the woman who was upset at the bus terminal may have been one. But you were talking about the peace you brought to the situation. And in the sutra I read this morning, you know, there, I guess it's King Yama is asking this person.
The Lord of the realm of the dead.
Yes. Whether he had seen, you know, each divine messenger. And the guy says, well, no. And he says, well, have you never seen? And he starts off, you know, with a child that's hungry and crying and moves on to the sick person and the dead person. And he goes, well, yes, I saw them. He said, well, why didn't you do anything? And he says, well, I was negligent. And then all of these horrible things happened to him because he was negligent. And I was wondering, the action he was supposed to take when encountering these people, I don't think was entirely clear to me.
It was not specified, right?
No, I don't believe it was. But I was wondering if you could speak to that, because I think your talk about the peace you brought to it may be one of those actions that might...
Well, and as I said, there wasn't much to it, right? It's just like, I feel this person's agitation, and it's really painful, and that's okay. I can just inhabit this space with her and let her, and not run away, right? And not tell her to be quiet, and tell her, you know, it's okay. It's just two blocks over there, you know, and see if that would. You know. But when you were speaking, because of the way I grew up, I immediately thought of, I can't remember, is this the right term? The evangelical councils. Because I was hungry, you gave me food. Because I was naked, you gave me clothing. I think Jesus was talking about exactly the same thing.
I was thinking now we should just put the motto over the door. This is a Zen hall. We tell all the truth, but we tell it slant.
We tell it slant. Yeah.
And then people who come in wouldn't expect to get it, to get
right.
What was going, you know.
That's a good point.
You know.
And this is Emily Dickinson, not Yashan.
Yeah.
That would be an excellent motto for our webpage. All the truth that we tell.
Good.
And we chanted a chant tonight, and that was all truth, and it was all told, most.
Yeah.
All told slant.
Slanty. Oh, yeah.
Very slant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you have to, you know, thank you for that point, because I think it's what blocks so many people.
I think it does.
From this practice is because, you know, we're not shining a light right in their eyes.
Right.
You know, it's off to the side.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, the last line of her poem, something like, tell it slant, or every man be blind.
Hmm.
Yeah. Of course, she meant human, not man, but back in the day, that's what they said.
Back in the day, it was 10 years ago.
Back in the day in 1840-something. You could say man, and people wouldn't go, wait a minute, hello, I'm a woman.
Now you say human.
Human, right. Mm-hmm.
Also, that's one thing I liked about the story, too, is that a first gal gets rung up for being stuck in gain and loss.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like he's, you know, I kind of thought, well, actually, you know, you could be stuck in gain and loss, and you could
that very evening.
You could live in, you could be from that peaceful province.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's how it is. Yeah. For me, a lot of times, yeah, mm-hmm. stuck in gain and loss, but I can be from a peaceful province.
My province is peaceful too.
Yeah.
Lately, when I'm in those situations where people are erupting, I just endeavor to remember that the situation is bad enough. I don't need to backfill it with my own story.
Tempting sometimes.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I wanted to share, that as I was driving back from Davis this afternoon in rush hour mm-hmm. and endeavoring to be at peace, I was listening to NPR, and they were interviewing Sally Field. Did anybody hear that interview? And she quoted, I don't remember who it was, but the quote was, "It's never too late mm. to become who you could have been." Mm. And maybe in the light of this talk, it's never too late to become who you are.
Mm-hmm. Just one thing. Do you find it problematic to endeavor to be peaceful?
No.
Oh, okay. Would you be willing to share how you approach that? If there's an endeavor, I just wonder, are you doing something?
No.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like an endeavor, really.
I would say there are times that I forget that I'm peaceful.
Oh, okay.
So it's remembering that I'm
mm-hmm.
peaceful.
Yep, and that's the Buddhist term is smriti, mm-hmm. and the Christian term is recollection. Right? Mm-hmm.
This is my first time here, and I just wanted to thank you guys, because it just kind of...
Welcome, welcome.
Like, last night, I was just talking to my sister about peace. She just recently is going through diabetes, and she's taking it really bad. And she's 20, and she doesn't understand it's a change of lifestyle. And she's just bringing everybody down, like you were talking about that lady. And that's my sister in the household.
Yeah.
And I was talking to her about that last night. I was just like, "Do you believe in peace?" And she's like, "You can't attain peace. Like, you're just, what are you chasing?"
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of sat there, and I couldn't tell her anything. And like you said, you know, you can point to the answer, but you can't really mm-hmm. shine the light, or it's just like it finally made sense. And I just wanted to, you know, kind of share that thanks mm-hmm. because it just kind of like...
Mm-hmm. Could you, just kind of, invite her into your peaceful space without, telling her you're doing that or making her do something? Just kind of... Okay, she's really agitated, and that means I can actually be really quiet and just be here with her.
That alone disturbs her. I could just sit there, and she's just like, "Get away from me." And I can be doing nothing. She's like, "Get away from me." And I'm just like, okay.
So you have to come up with another slant.
Another slant.
I'm still working. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm working.
Well, a bodhisattva responds to the situation. So if for some reason the situation requires agitation, the bodhisattva will be right there. Which is, not that many situations really require more agitation, but you got to be, lively and nimble.
Okay.
Right?
Try to find
it. Okay. Sis, let's get excited together. Oh my God, diabetes! Ah! And then maybe she'll feel like, "Don't be ridiculous." And it's like, "Oh, right. Okay, sorry."
It's a different approach. I didn't think about that.
I'm open.
Yes, some don't. And you can't tell them, you can't tell what it's going to be ahead of time. That's the thing. Yeah. Did a question back there? Yeah.
Hi, yes, thank you. This is my first time, too. And
welcome.
I came here on accident.
Oh.
I meant to come to tomorrow's class. I'm a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I feel like it was a very good accident, because what you spoke about with the woman being upset, really, mm-hmm. I had that experience today with one of my students, a young African-American young man who I've had as a student before, and he was talking about some very difficult things in his life, and he had a panic attack in my office, which triggered a seizure, a very serious seizure.
Oh, man.
And then the nurse was not available, so the police came, and he had a horrible panic attack because he was afraid the police would hurt him. And he couldn't move, and it was very, very disturbing.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah, it was really, really hard. And he's a very, very gentle person. So the police, you know, stood back because he was so scared of them. And
well, that's something right there.
And another woman and I, another teacher, we're just two English teachers, sat on the floor and talked. She's had some training, so that was good. First aid. And I don't even know how much he could, you know, how cognizant he was. But, you know, we just tried to comfort him and say his name and say that he was safe until the firemen came. I think they also scared him. So,
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, except, you know, now I'm have all this, I don't really know what to do with all the feelings. Like, so you were saying about that, the situation's bad enough, I don't have to add all my anxiety about what we are all learning about young black men and the police and all the upsetting stuff that, and also I don't know how involved I should get, you know, and...
Yeah, and you can't figure it out ahead of time. That's what I was saying. You know, it's like, okay, what's happening now?
Right, and so I guess I'm not in touch with my peaceful province yet, totally.
That you know.
That I know of, right.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful, and I feel like I'm in the right place, so.
Yeah, well, your province is peaceful, so... And the more you kind of, like the story says, take that on, that will strengthen your familiarity and your confidence. So that if everyone, what is that? If everyone else around you is losing their head, what is the rest of that? You don't have to, or something. You know? And even if like, oh, this situation is really out of hand here, but here I am.
Thanks.
Just now I was thinking about when I was younger and I used to smoke marijuana, we would sometimes talk about a contact high. When you weren't and somebody else was or something. But this seems like it's, I mean, it really is, it's kind of like when you're with a baby, you get a contact high too. Or so this is a contact piece.
Yeah, your since it's the same piece, your piece can your peaceful something can help them be in touch with theirs without having to explain something or do something. It really does work. 100% of the time, it won't always look like it's working, though. You know, sometimes people are just there in such a high orbit, you know. You're going to have to wait around for them to come back down. That's just how it is.
But you, if you stay...
As my brother's Catholic priest, and, you know, they know about this stuff too. And he said, you know, well, we call that the ministry of presence. Just you. And he, she, it, they. That's all.
Thank you.
I have to tell this story.
Please.
I went down to Modesto to check things out for this thing that I'm doing, and I went to the office that I wanted to volunteer for, and they sent me out to register people to vote in front of a Walmart. And so I stood out there and attempted to register people to vote. And this Filipino couple came up. And well, I later learned they were Filipino. And they were, the guy stopped. And he looked at me and he called his wife back. And they asked me, what is this voting thing?
Wow.
And they were in their 70s.
Wow.
And somehow, and they were citizens, but they were never, they had never voted.
They never voted.
They had never voted.
I'll be damned.
And I got the, there were some things said that I understood that to vote where they came from was to put yourself in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And so you didn't vote because
you could get killed.
You could get harmed.
Yeah.
Anyway, they were so curious about it, and as I was, they wanted to do it. They decided it was safe to do it.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So we did the forms and we went through filling them out. And this is the other thing that can happen is that you know, I just fell in love with these people right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just so in love with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like we had such a great connection, and I don't know, I just wanted to go home with them.
Right. Yeah.
It was just one of these great moments, and they knew nothing about elections or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
They really didn't know it, and they didn't know anything about Congress or the Senate. I was explaining about, you know, how the system worked. I don't quite know how that happened because they were naturalized citizens, so they had to go through a process. But maybe it was a long time ago and they forgot.
Yeah.
If the man had served in the United States military, he may become a citizen.
Oh, perhaps he had served in the military, and that's how he became a citizen. Well, anyway,
hard to believe that there are people in the country who would bar them from that if they could. That's horrifying.
Oh, yes, yes.
Horrifying.
But anyway, sometimes that, you know, I don't know, there just can be this great connection that happens with people.
It's a big province. It is very big.
It's a big province.
It's a very big province. So I was also trying to think, you know, how to tell this slant, since there isn't any other way. This, you know, we're not talking about Zazen. That is, we are talking about Zazen. And because of the peaceful province, often when people are doing Zazen, there's the person and there's the Zazen that they're doing. Okay? And there is no such boundary. So you aren't doing Zazen. Right? There is no boundary. You are Zazen. Zazen is happening. So there's often a tendency for people to kind of try to keep an eye on what they're doing when they're doing Zazen. They're trying to watch themselves. You know, they're trying to make sure that it's going really well and that good Zazen things are happening. And this is like there's an unnecessary division there. So the sense of the term that we use, just sitting, points to there being no such boundary. Right? Suzuki Roshi told somebody, you know, Zazen is doing you. Okay? So when Dogen gives instructions like, you know, he in his slant way, he says, you don't need to bring your evaluative mind to your practice of sitting. Just let it go. Entirely inhabit this moment as just that person that you are. Right? And you'll find it helpful not to, you know, go to sleep or daydream too much. And to take responsibility for zazen is just you, moment after moment after moment. So you don't have to check up on how you're doing.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, of course.
Intellectually, I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
But I also read passages from time to time from various teachers that say, make a great effort. There's a great effort in sitting.
Mm-hmm.
So on the surface, it would appear to be...
Contradiction?
Yeah.
No. I'll show you a great effort. Want to see a great effort?
Sure.
That's what they mean. Your peaceful province is great effort. That's where you live. So don't try to add anything to that.
Okay.
Okay.
When I try and give great effort, it's just concerning my posture and my breathing.
That's good.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
But again, don't pile stuff up onto that. Just, you know, breathing, posture, here we still are, here we are some more. Ding. Okay, let's do something else.
Seems like it goes by a little slower than that.
And sometimes not. Sometimes it just zips by and you can't tell, you know. You can't control that clock.
I had an interesting experience that I kind of got attached to. I fell asleep in meditation and I was at the kitchen counter doing stuff, being busy at the kitchen counter, and then it
you were chopping, were you?
Something like that.
Okay.
And it occurs to me, this is all illusion. Well, none of this is real. I'm actually somewhere else. And then I took a great deal of delight of delaying waking up from my meditation, sitting by the pool outside.
I see. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I have no comment other than if there's a problem there, you'll feel it. If there's some attachment there, you'll feel it. Other than that, I bless you, my child. Okay, so anyway, it's almost 9 and my head aches, so maybe we'll stop now. And it was really great hanging out with you guys. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.